Now Kid Talks, a Wheel of Time Theory podcast. I am Rob, your technologically inept host, and today we're talking first-time reader stuff again. I've got Null back, we're on to chapter 16, and it's the second time we've done this intro so far, isn't it, Null?
It is. It's been exciting.
It has. We've been in a chat for nearly half an hour, and we've recorded about 30 seconds of audio that's usable, so... It's been good. We did talk about the fact we hit 5,000 downloads, or I hit 5,000 downloads, and it was your episode that pushed us over the limit.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. No curtsy required. and then we were like, you wanted 50K, and I was like, let's go 25. So, but you're still secretly wanting 50, so. There's your synopsis, folks. Blame technology. Let's crack into chapter 16, because that's what we're doing today, and we've already done the intro once. So if anyone is not familiar, this is where Nynaeve has turned up at the inn in Baelon, and everyone's arrived outside, and they're going, oh, okay, let's go in and basically see what happens. As they're going in, Min is pulling Rand to one side and says they need to talk, and everyone sort of waits for him when they realize he's not coming in. Is this the funny sentences, or am I just misreading this?
Which bit? The jungle?
The jungle? Oh, I'm not there just yet. Yeah, the jungle bit, yes. So, yeah, Tom calling out that they don't have time for this, to which Min retorts, go to jungle or something. Oh, I am so good at putting this up for patrons.
He's famous for doing, isn't it? You know, jungling around.
Indeed, yes. You've got to jungle around, folks. It's the way to do things. That's the secret to... longevity in life. So Tom has kind of just said, look, come on, we don't have time to do this, and Min is told him to bugger off. and Min sort of sneaks up to, or goes close to Rand and says, there's someone new at the inn and she's connected to them all. Rand is still not believing and tells Min that Nynaeve can't be part of it, whatever it is, but Min is insistent and she tells him since Nynaeve arrived, they're all in a lot more danger. That's a pretty ominous warning, isn't it, really?
Yeah. She doesn't mention what she sees when she looks at her. But I wonder, because she said that she sees them as all connected, doesn't she? So I wonder whether it's like threads or whether there's like a uniform colour they all give off or something.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So like an aura or something that gets brighter when they're together or something. They're all glowing. Orange, for example, or something. Are you there?
Danger bell.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, sorry. Did you hear me? I said, what's dinging that danger bell?
Oh, right. Okay. Yep. Sorry. You disappeared for a second there. But I got what you meant. So cool. Rand is not getting the meaning you've put, successfully pulling his arm away from a grip and says that she won't do something to hurt them before walking away. Matt asks. Yeah, sorry, Gary.
I was just going to say, he clearly thinks that she means that Nynaeve is there to do them harm. That's why I sort of said about not getting the meaning, because he's got the wrong end of the stick there, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's thinking that she's the trouble, when really it's just she's increased the trouble they're all in, is kind of what Min's trying to say.
Mm.
Matt gets nosy and asks, and Rand just replies without thought and says Nynaeve is part of it, and Tom overhears, asks what... And Matt quickly covers for him. And Perrin hesitates at the door before they all enter. I don't blame him for that. she's an imposing person. I might be a little bit like, do I want to go in? But they do go in. It's the room there where they had dinner the previous night. And we've got Nynaeve and Moraine sat at opposite ends of the table, staring at each other. And Lan is just off to the side, rubbing his hands in front of the fire. So, you know, not a tense situation at all.
I picture that is probably written as in Lan is just off to the side, you know, he's keeping away from them to let them do their thing and just rubbing his hands to keep himself warm. Mm-hmm. But in my head, that is playing as he's there, like fidgeting, like, oh crap, what am I doing in this room?
Okay, so Lan not just sort of standing there staring is, and him actually, you know, deliberately being to one side and focusing on trying to warm up his hands is kind of him displaying some anxiety at the situation.
Yeah. Because I don't think I'd be in that room feeling very calm.
No, I don't think I would either, actually. That's quite a situation. So, yeah, okay. Interesting thing. I when I first read that, I thought that Lan was just all chill with the situation. It was just like, eh, shit like this happens every day. So,
yeah, I suppose that could be possible after reading.
I like what you've... I like that concept, though. So, you know, we won't take that off the table. Speaking of the table, they all sit down. Except for Tom, who does stay near the door in silence. But he then breaks the silence first. I think Tom's quite wise here. Like, for everyone else sits at the table, and Tom's like, I'm going to stay by the door. You know, to me, this is like the guy in... I don't know, who goes into that dangerous situation, whatever it may be, and stands next to the exit. And, you know, like, I'm here, I'm involved, but I'm two steps away from the exit. Did you get that vibe?
Yeah. I mean, in general, I am very much getting a wiser, more mature vibe off Tom as it progresses.
Okay.
You know, here's this jester guy, but actually, you know, he's seen a lot. Maybe he's there to make fun and tell stories and get attention, but there's an intelligence behind it all that I think I'm starting to see.
Cool. Yeah, he does strike me as a clever guy, so I get that too. Lan offers Nynaeve some wine that she has refused previously, suspiciously, and tells her he is interested in how she found them, and that is mirrored by Moraine. She explains how she tracked them, even though they left very little trace, and she already suspected they would be at Baelon. Were you surprised by that?
I am surprised by the whole thing, to be honest with you. I was very shocked that she turned up.
Okay.
I think I mentioned that last time, didn't I, about how you know, she's left the village alone.
Yes.
And I thought that was a bit odd. But, yeah, I suppose thinking on it, I didn't think she'd have those sort of skills, almost like Hunter-esque sort of ability to track people.
Yes.
I thought the powers that she used were more of a medicinal kind of nature, you know, of helping people and taking care of people rather than abilities that spread further into those sort of skills.
Yeah, I think that's valid. You know, she's peddled at the beginning as, you know, the healer of the village and such, and here she is tracking an Aes Sedai and her warder, albeit with some, you know, country bumpkins, but still, you know, it's a surprising situation. So I didn't see her appearing either. I didn't expect that to happen. So I'm with you there in that sense. So don't feel bad at all. Moraine proceeds to sort of ask Nynaeve some questions that she has already answered many. And it causes Nynaeve to angrily tell them she's heard are tales. And she's there to take them back to Emmons Field, and she couldn't care less about Aes Sedai. Moraine cautions her to be careful of the words she uses, as people would hear, and then Tom quite strongly tells her that they are all in grave danger if they are suspected. And he says this is all the more reason to take them back. Do you think she's being smart here, like ignoring all these warnings, or just being stupid?
No, I don't think she's being stupid. I don't know whether smart's the correct term either. I think she's a very headstrong person. And by the sounds of it, you know, she's decided that the safest place for them all is Edmund's Field. And she's travelled all this way following them with the sort of mindset that they need to be back in the safety of Edmund's Field. And she doesn't regard the other information as really as important as this focused point of, right, you're coming back with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So it's not necessarily about being stupid or smart. It's more of she's got a fixed focus and that's what she's trying to achieve. She's not bothered so much about, you know, she doesn't care about the Aes Sedai. So she's not bothered who hears that name. It's, I guess, sort of a stubborn response, isn't it? Like, oh, I don't care. Like, not interested in you.
Mm-hmm.
It's these people I'm trying to save, and that's kind of where she's at.
Cool. Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. Well, then we get sort of the boys sort of speaking up. So Rand's first saying, we can't go back. The Trollocs will follow. He hopes they're going to find some answers in Tarvon. Nynaeve compares him to Rand, explaining how he dragged himself to the village council and the meeting trying to dissuade them all for looking for the group. Matt asks about his father. Nynaeve obviously says he's worried. Matt will try one of his pranks and end up in trouble. And you've got an interesting comment about that one.
Yeah, the first time I've made a note so far.
Yes. Like knocking barrels towards a group of white cloaks and almost starting a fight.
there was definitely a moment of like, oh yeah, when I read that.
Yeah, I would definitely put that as, you know, like getting, that's prankish. Yeah, so get yourself in trouble. Yeah, I think that fits. So Perrin adds that he doesn't think Master Luhan is going to be very happy with him. And Nynaeve says he's not. She expects it from those three, but the others. But not the others. I had to reread that again.
Yeah.
So when you say those three, what do you mean, all three boys, but not the others? I'm lost there.
Yeah, Matt, Perrin, and Rand. She expects them to cause, you know, to do something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But she's surprised at Gwaine. Particularly. Right.
Gotcha. So, but.
And I assume when it. Because I think it does use the word others in the book. I think probably assuming that she means Tom.
Right. Okay.
As that's the only other person there, I don't think she'd be talking about Moraine or Lan.
No. Fair. I mean, Gwaine is just hiding behind Perrin. He's a big guy, so that makes sense. And muttering that she left a note. unlike Rand, who decided to just verbally tell everybody, as we picked up back then. But they do argue for a while, comparing where they will be all safer before Moraine instructs Gwaine to take everyone out of the room so she and the Wisdom can talk in private. Lan leaves too and stands guard outside the door. When the door eventually opens, Nynaeve steps out and Rand realizes other than Lan stood guard, everyone else has left. Lan goes in and Nynaeve moves towards Rand. I'm going to ask you, what do you think they had a conversation about? Like, potentially, how did it go, I suppose?
So tricky. I haven't really thought about it. And I think, if I had to guess, I think Moraine probably tries to reason with Nynaeve. Now that she's heard the others all say, you know, not sure it's safer back there. And Rand sort of saying, oh, well, we're trying to adhere to try and find some answers.
Mm-hmm.
I think Moraine has tried to reason with her and say, look, they all know the danger, or they all have seen some of the danger that they're in. This is not over if they go back. You know, we're going here to try and find answers and we're going to do this. And, you know, this is the most sensible option. And try to reason with her in that way of what's the most sensible. Yeah, because I don't really, other than that, we don't hear any shouting. So it's got to be a calmer conversation.
It's a good point. A very, very good point. Rand would have commented if he'd heard some shouting or anything of that nature. So, cool. Well, I'll tell you now, we never find out the actual words of that conversation, so we can only speculate on it. But I agree with the no shouting thing. So, Nynaeve does look at Rand, and despite preferring the sword or not at Rand's side, she does comment that it seems to suit him more now and that he's grown. Rand laughs, it's only been a week. Yep, that's a lot of growing in a week, apparently. Although it's a hell of a week to have gone through. So, here's a question. How long did you think this journey from leaving the Two Rivers, or leaving, sorry, the village to getting to Bail On and 90 Utility Bastards? Does that feel like a week?
I thought probably about a week.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because it was overnight the first travel, wasn't it? Till they crossed
the ferry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then they camped, and then they travelled for I think it was a week to get to Bail On.
Cool.
And they've slept once, so it's just over a week, if I remember correctly. It'd be like 8 days.
Well, a week in Wheel of Time is 10 days, I believe.
So I'm a couple of days off somewhere, but yeah.
No, but that's fine. A week kind of fits in anyway, so it doesn't matter how you look at it. I might be wrong, and it might be 7 days, so or 8 days, who knows. But I had a feeling that it was 10, so. But yeah, cool. Nynaeve is shocked that he's asked to join them, or asked her if she's going to join them, that she's got Marva Malum. Is that that? I can't remember if that's the actual name, but that's the name in the notes, another wisdom, to come take over duties until she returns. But she won't be staying long. She hopes that they will return with her. And we get Rand reiterating that he can't, and she replies he's already said that, so is Moraine. And he remarks how she seems like she believes them somewhat. And then he questions why she's come. It's odd for a wisdom that the mayor normally would have left before a wisdom would. And he says something must have happened at Emmons Field. And Nynaeve is impressed by these observations, commenting again on how he has grown. But, you know, your notes here say that... Oh, sorry. Rand has noticed something move in the corner of his eye a moment ago, but there was nothing there. Before Nynaeve answers, she looks too, but again, nothing is there. Is Lan or Moraine eavesdropping? Do you think they're eavesdropping? Didn't they go in and shut the door?
Well, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they could eavesdrop when the door is shut, particularly after seeing some of Moraine's powers. It's probably more ominous than that, but I don't know what it would be.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a bit of an odd thing. It points it out, I think, three times. You know, something causes him to look off twice and Nynaeve looks once. So there's something going on, but I just couldn't work out what it was.
Okay. So potentially someone's spying on them. Cool.
Yeah. But
at this stage, Nynaeve does grab Rand and they, you know, says just, well, why don't we talk while we walk sort of thing. So, and we get a bit of discussion about Emmons Field. It's been a bit of a shambles. The town's sort of split in two. Some saying, let's go, rescue them. And everyone's like, you know, no, basically. All the men seem determined that they should go. Fearing the group was in danger and expediency was needed, Nynaeve called a meeting of the women's circle. And she told them that she would go. And that is actually what happened. And I love your note here. So tell us what you thought about this discussion.
I just immediately in my head had a picture of, you know, some sort of meeting hall. And everyone's shouting and jeering and trying to get their voice heard that, you know, I should do this and I'll do this. No, me, and they're all going off. And it just goes on for days and days and days. And I was just picturing Nynaeve just going, oh, for God's sake. I'm walking out and just sort of leaving. And they're all still shouting.
Yeah, it would kind of be like, it's almost like she kind of just said, hold my beer, let me do this.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. The men unable to come to a decision, and like the women get together, like, let's just fucking fix this. So
yeah, they'll turn up at Edmunds Field in sort of 3 books' time, and they'll still be going, no, I'll go. It's fine.
Yeah, they'll have decided they need to send someone, and they'll move on to the conversation of who do we send. And we'll be like, pros yes. and cons of groups. Well, if you have this person, the dynamics like this. But if you take that out and add this person, dynamics like that. So, you know. Nice. Rand does ask about the conversation Moraine and Nynaeve have had. And it's, you know, she says it's similar to what, you know, Rand has said, that they cannot go back. Moraine also used the time to try and ascertain what the possible reason could be for the Dark One hunting them. She particularly wants to know if any of the three were born outside the Two Rivers. So, as I said, we don't get the actual verbatim what happened, but we get kind of a quick synopsis. So, it wasn't just a, you know, passionate argument. It was kind of like questioning as well. But tell us about your notes, like your thoughts here after, you know, she's asked Nynaeve, has anyone been born outside the Two Rivers? What did you say here?
So I said, I'm not going to get too excited about my own theories at this point, but Tam's overheard Fever Dream ran the child on the side of a mountain. It just all starts, things start weaving together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still waiting for the sort of page I read that goes, ah, you were wrong. It's going to happen. I know it's going to happen.
Have faith in your own predictions, mate. Come on, you might get it. You might not. I can't say yes or no. I'm not going to tip the scales in either direction. But, you know, feel free to back yourself. You know, it's okay. No one's going to, you know, judge or laugh or anything. I was listening, and I can't give you any context or any details, but I'm listening to The Wheel Reads, which is another first-time reader podcast. Is a first-time reader podcast. You've got Alan, the veteran reader, and then you've got Chris and Ian, who are the first-time readers. They're on book, I want to say they're on book 3 or 4 at this stage. I'm catching up, and they're on book 2. And there was somewhere late in this book, the first book, that I was listening to a few weeks ago. And they said it wasn't even that. Maybe it was like last week or the week before. A couple of weeks ago. And it was early on in book 2 recording. And they made a comment about one of the characters. And they were like, I bet in book 13 this happens. And I was like, the fuck? That happens in book 14. But it happens basically how he described it. Like, holy fucking shit. So feel free to back yourself if you think something. Because that wild theory or idea or just joke might actually be spot on, mate. So, and anyone who's familiar with The Wheel Reads, you know, it was Ian who made this wild comment and kind of just blew my mind. So hopefully you remember that moment too. And if not, you can DM me and I'll tell you what the wild prediction was. So, but yeah, so going back to the comment here, Rand is obviously, you know, his voice is croaking and he's saying hopes that she assured Moraine they were all born in Emmons Field. And we have a brief pause before she replies, of course. So, Rand is spinning out over the fever dream, as you've just mentioned, and the wisdom is supposed to know everything about everyone. So if she knows, it must be true. And your response, 2 words, but very simple, and I love them. Called it.
I think I got excited at this point.
Good. I'm glad you should have got excited at this point. So, but yeah. So we get a bit of a lore drop here. So Rand obviously sort of just blurbs out what Tam said in his fever dream. Nynaeve grabs him and says, look, firstly, the things people say strange things when they're taken by a fever, things that aren't true. Tam is from Emmons Field, ran away when he was young, and he returned many years later, a man with a red-haired wife and child.
I'd just like to interject there. That first line that she says, evil. Why say that? Because that made me think, oh, you know, she's going to tell him that actually it's not true. But then she said it is true. Oh, you know, when they're in fever, you know, they say all sorts of things. But by the way, the things that he was saying while he was in the fever dream, all true.
Well,
but they do say weird things, but those were true.
I mean, do you perhaps think she meant that? Because he talks about, you know, baby on the side of the mountain and all those sorts of bits and pieces. Is that knowledge you think that he's going to have shared with the wisdom?
Oh, good point. Yeah, probably not. I don't imagine they. Well, maybe they did sit down and over a cup of
cup of calf and cup of calf, cup of brandy, something. I don't know. By the way, folks, I have told Null that Calf is basically the Wheel of Time version of coffee. He knows it doesn't make an appearance yet, but we do use the word calf. So, by the way, if you hear him saying the word calf and you're like, and you're a first time reader, you haven't heard this, or you're a veteran and you're like, how does he know the word calf? That's my fault. It's from my YouTube video section. So, it means coffee. I didn't think it was a spoiler. So,
well, you've ruined the box now, haven't you?
Yeah, I've ruined the whole thing. That's it. You know what calf is? That's it. World over. Libby will have to come on the podcast instead. So, side tangent again for a moment. So Noel and I work together, and there's one of the waitresses out front. Her mother is a big Wheel of Time fan. I don't know her actual name. She's primarily on Reddit and that, Libby says. But yeah, Libby has recently picked up the books, I thought, because her mother keeps telling her to read them. But one of the other team members at work then came to me and was like, I hear you've got Libby to start reading the books. So I didn't realize that. That's not how she worded it to me. But I'm claiming credit that I got another person to read the books. And she reads a little faster than you now, doesn't she? You said she was about 80 pages in, and you're like, shit, she's already about to pass me. I think you're further ahead than that. We're on chapter... You've got up to the end of chapter 18... To be only 80 pages, that implies
I'm just shy of 300.
There we go. I was going to say, chapters have got to be sort of 12, 15, 20 pages long sometimes. All right, sometimes they're probably only 6 or 8 pages, but not very often. So I reckon you're much further ahead, but she will catch up, I'm sure. Anyway, enough of that tangent. We'll go back to the fever dreams. maybe they did sit down over a cup of calf and... Tam just was like, well, you know, this is the Two Rivers census. This is my child. This is, you know, this is my wife. This is all the details. And it's very potential. So, yeah. But you've put nice to know you were right that, Rand is not a Two Rivers child, so to speak. Are you glad you're right?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I think I would have been annoyed with myself if I was reading it that wrong throughout, picking on those random signals and going, no, this is half, and then no, it's not.
Cool. Yeah, I it's always nice to be right about things, especially if they look like they're blatantly obvious. So yeah, nice. Well, Rand follows this up with asking if anybody else is born out of the Two Rivers, but retracts the question because it's none of his business. Nynaeve agrees, points out that it may not mean anything. Your notes are like, oh, it does. that Moraine may just be searching blindly for any reason of why they're being hunted. Rand obviously picks up on this and says, so you do believe they're after us? And Nynaeve smiles, telling him he has learnt how to twist words since leaving, and asks what she would do now. She tells him today a bath, and after that we shall have to see. So... And that's the end of the notes for this chapter, folks. That has got to be a record before I get Null to dive into his thoughts of this chapter and Nynaeve turning up. We have just summarized an entire chapter in 30 minutes, Null. That's amazing.
Bloody hell.
To be fair, it was just a lot of talking in this chapter, wasn't it? One room, you know, a little bit of entry, one room talking, we were talking outside the room. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was a reasonably short and sweet chapter. It was, I guess, the introduction to Nynaeve's presence, wasn't it, really? Mm-hmm. There wasn't meant to be a chapter where tons of stuff happened, because it would have interfered with the interaction with her.
Yeah, and we get the confirmation, as you say, that Rand is not a Two Rivers child, so that opens the shenanigans up to God knows what now, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add before we move on to the next chapter?
I think, I'm not sure whether it was this chapter or the next, but I'm going to say it was this chapter. I think was the beginning where my attitude towards Rand sort of changed, or at least began to change. I think in previous chapters I've been annoyed with him as a character in the story for being quite
stupid,
not just like childish, I guess, a bit naive, and doing some silly things. I think in this one, with his conversation with Nynaeve, especially when he stood up for not going back at the table, and then certainly when he stops himself from trying to gather information that he you know doesn't feel like he's actually relevant to him at the moment, I think you start to see a slightly different side to him.
Cool.
A little bit more mature, maybe.
Sweet. I like it. It's nice that that your opinions are changing as we get more information.
Yeah, I hope he isn't a complete dick for the rest of the time, and I'm just like, for God's sake, there was that one time he was cool.
You were cool for like 5 minutes, and then you're an asshole again. Well, there's plenty of books for us to find out what happens there, so yeah. I'm sure there'll be ebbing and flowing on the liking-dislike parts of the scale, so. But chapter 17, Watchers and Hunters. We're going to try and knock this out at about 40 minutes, I think, because you have to skedaddle. And thanks to my pre-recording fuck-ups, we wasted half an hour. So, but I think we've got 4 pages of notes here. So I'm going to try and summarize the summarizing quite speedily so we can spend it on chatting instead. But basically, Rand heads to the comm room after this, thinking he's going to have a bit of laughter. It might be the cure for the worries that have been brought to him. There's no laughter, but it is packed because we've got Tom in the corner performing the Great Hunt of the Horn, or part of it. And you've put here, the whole story might take a week to tell. It's a long-ass story, isn't it? Jesus.
Yeah, a lot of talking.
Yeah, how many tram rides is that going to take you to listen to?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, anyway. So Rand joins in, or sits with a friend, sorry. And one part of the story is mentioned Blaze. B-L-A-E-S. Maybe I'm saying that wrong. One of the 8 hunters, marked by the Dark One as one of his own, but she fights against it, rejecting him. And after a day of stories, Tom eventually swaps harp for flute, and music begins instead. So we move from storytelling to singing. Get a bit of a crowd. Yeah, sorry, go for it.
I was just going to say, just quickly, I wonder whether that is a... oh my God, what's the word for it? A... omen of things to come. That's not the right word for it.
Oh,
but
like a premonition of some kind, I suppose. Or
yeah, just like a fun little snippet that kind of suggests where the story might go.
Ah, okay. Well, we'll keep that one in the pocket there. Someone potentially being marked by the Dark One as one of their own, fighting against it, one of their own, one of its own, fighting against it and rejecting him. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that. See if anybody fits into that category later on. As I said, we get a bit of music now, and we get a crowd, we get some dancing, Rand joins in, Perrin joins in, Matt's watching all the, you know, he's being the handbag guardian there. As they take their places opposite all the girls, because this is a bit like line dancing or something of that nature, where you know, it's not a case of just, you know, shaking things on the dance floor, it's an actual, like, choreographed thing. We've got a fun little moment here with Rand opposite a girl. The girl gives Rand a shy smile and then a not-so-shy wink. Ha-ha. And Gwaine's not like that, is she? You've put.
I don't really think she'd be that bothered. It was more I was poking fun at him a little bit with his frustration at anything she says that isn't sort of homely wife type. Comment.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Just thought, oh, Gwaine, I'll be mad at you.
Yep.
I'm sort of expecting a little bit of a romantic sort of thing to happen here, and it didn't. But that's why I said that was like, oh.
Ah. New love interest around. No, that did not appear, sadly. Never mind. We do have a scary man in the corner with a scar across his face who looked way. When Rand looked at him, which Rand took as embarrassment, but you had thoughts about this person, didn't you?
Yeah, straight away I was like, oh yeah, this guy's he's watching, and he's just been caught out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put, am I becoming paranoid? Why aren't they yet? Because it just rang so many alarm bells with me. Yeah, it made me think, oh, I'd be watching that guy all the time thinking, was he embarrassed because he felt like I was looking at his scar? Or, you know, is it likely as we are in potential constant danger that he might be watching us?
Good questions. Good questions. We do get the man sitting there scowling at him. So, you know, I don't know whether the guy was trying to hide his face or decided he'd been spotted or was like, hold up, I was embarrassed, but I shouldn't be embarrassed because you're looking at me, so now I'm going to scowl at you instead type thing. So, you know, you've put Wilbur Ant. So the man is scowling at him now and tells himself he didn't mean to stare too much, obviously, Rand. You put, well, Rand, maybe you weren't, you know, and you know you and your friends are being hunted, you know, so. Yeah. So maybe the, you know, there's small paranoia slipping in there that they don't know about, I suppose. But back to the dancing, and we have Nynaeve appear. Did you expect Nynaeve to be dancing?
No. No. I didn't expect any of this bit. I really didn't.
No? What did you think of the dancing as a whole? Because we get Nynaeve, then we get Moraine, and you're like, what? And then we get Egwene. And they all sort of treat him a little differently. But this whole dancing scene in general, like, you know, did, after all this, you know, the wandering around Bear Lawn and, you know, white cloak situations and, you know, Nynaeve appearing and serious conversations about, like, where you were born and stuff, we suddenly get this whole dancing scene. What are your thoughts in general?
My thoughts in general were poor Rand. You know, if he's not being hunted by the Dark One, he's being perpetually embarrassed by a string of females who he already feels awkward around. And that's kind of how I felt, was like, oh dear, oh dear. You know, he's the, in my mind, in this current state, the sort of awkward teen in the corner, like rubbing his legs as he doesn't really know what to do with himself. And he's being thrust into awkward situations, and just as he thinks one's over, oh no, here's someone else that's going to make him feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a fun scene. We get, you know, the different interactions. He gets, you know, better as the night goes on. He gets compliments. He gets silence from Egwene. Like, it's an up and down night for him, I have to say. So, I do enjoy near the end that you, like, first Moraine and then Egwene sort of leave the dance. But Nynaeve joined for one more before departing with a look as though she had gained a point on the Aes Sedai. I love what you've put here.
Great. The wheel dance off has begun.
Yep, the wheel dance off has begun. There's got to be a dance competition somewhere. I know that Jordan Conn has a karaoke contest, so we need to put in a dancing contest as well at some point, I think. So, great, excellent.
Yeah, it could be a form of line dance. And as you swap partners, you have to make the other person as uncomfortable as possible until they all leave. It's the last person, last couple standing. Dancing together that win. There you go.
Okay, so not uncomfortable in a creepy way, more just uncomfortable.
No. But you can't, like,
make them feel like
expose
they're,
yourself.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, make them feel like they're, you know, they've got like three left feet or something stupid, as opposed to like, look, I'm so graceful and you're not. So they're like, oh, I'm too awkward.
Yeah.
In a good spirit to it. I like that idea. That's fun. Recreate this Bear Lawn dancing scene. I love it. Good ideas. So, Lan tries to get them to go to all the beds. After Tom finishes, they've got an early start. And Matt has noticed this man staring, as well as Rand. And Lan has noticed. And we learn that he's asked Master Fitch and that he is a white cloak spy and shouldn't bother them. But Rand does notice that something is bothering Lan. Matt inquires where Nynaeve is sleeping, because they got the last rooms in the house, and Tom says she's in the same room as Moraine and Egwene. Which I think
shocks everybody. Lovely, comfortable sleeping arrangement.
Yeah. That's gotta be, yeah. Like, you've run off to be an Aes Sedai, you've left your teacher, I suppose, your mistress, I don't know what the appropriate word is for what is it, master? Yeah, it's master and apprentice, isn't it? So you've left your wisdom master. I want to use that in a non-gendered way. I'm not going to say mistress, so it's just, you know, master and apprentice, I think, is just fine. Run off to learn something else, and now they've caught up with you. And it's like, oh, shit. And then the three of you have to share sleeping accommodations. So that does not seem like it's going to be fun. But never mind. Anyway. Rand decides to grab himself a glass of milk before bed, and Lan, before he goes upstairs, says, look, you know, careful what you say. Don't wander too far. Something's not right tonight. What did you think was not right?
Well, I wasn't particularly sure of a specific thing. Fact that Lan is concerned about something initially made me think that maybe white cloak spy maybe up to something more nefarious than just spying. And then I had the thought that when we had the interaction with Fane, I had the thought that he was going to turn up with some baddies at night and sort of catch them out. Uh-huh. And so I thought, oh, is he going to make a reappearance? Or is someone or something that he has told?
Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, as we quite quickly find out, once Rand has his jug of milk, it's not what actually happens. Knocking shit around on my desk. We do actually have a, you know, as Rand heads towards the stairs, we have a, the hallway is just filled with a dark figure that starts toward him, heavily cloaked, with pale hands extended out, and a hood pulls its hood back, revealing a pasty, white, eyeless face. And it calls out, "You're one of them, boy." Rand struggles to move, managing only one step away at a time. He tries to scream for help, but his throat feels like stone. Now, obviously, this is our Murderall appearing. It's quite a scary moment, isn't it?
Yeah, how is the TV show going to deal with the copyright around Dementors? Because that is 100% what I see when I read that description.
I mean, Dementors don't walk or ride horses.
True. Yeah.
So Dementors fly, and we have no evidence yet that Murderall fly. I mean, there's artistic license, isn't it? Eye of the World is heavily influenced by Lord of the Rings. So I suppose the challenge here is not make them look like they're ring wraiths.
Very true.
But modern audiences might definitely see Dementor vibes. Depends how they're presented. I know when I read that first, I was like, is this kind of like a combination between a ring wraith and Dementor? But this was written before Harry Potter. So
yeah, obviously. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So there's your grounds to not worry about it. But yeah, I suppose it's trying to make them look different from each. But it's still a scary moment. You know, it glides around Viper-esque. We've got black armor plates, thin lipless smiles. It's got quite a creepy voice, which I will not try and imitate. yeah. But then suddenly, we have a clatter of boots from above, and the Fade turns round, its face peering as if it can see through the wood. Can it? I don't know. Can it? What do you think, Bear? Can it see through wood? Can it see through things? It's an eyeless creature. What do you think it can actually see?
Oh, thinking about the fact it's eyeless, is it like a bat and it uses sort of echolocation? But no, I was intrigued by that. I mean, I don't like, you know me, I don't like jumping to conclusions. Mm-hmm. And I like to sit on the fence.
Only about Wheel of Time, folks. Don't ask him about Christmas. Christmas songs, but digressing.
I would hazard that they probably... I'm just trying to think logistically how it works, but I want to say yes. I want to say that they maybe sense people more than see them.
Okay.
Or they have a form of sight that is more of a... it's based on something else other than just light. It's not light that's the thing that's creating their vision.
Okay. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, that's the whole purpose of eyes is to capture light and then transmit that into something our brains can put as, can visualize. So, yeah, it's fair.
I was just picturing in my head sort of... like heartbeat sensor kind of thing. Like they get a blip and they see the veins and they can see a form rather than is in that they're not seeing a person, they're seeing a poof and all the arteries and like that make up the person rather than. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting. Very, very intriguing. I look forward. We haven't had, even the Trolloc reveal we got isn't an official finished Trolloc reveal, but we've not had a merger reveal yet, so that's, I feel like they might save that one for the actual TV show. But we'll see how that goes. That's an interesting idea. I like it. So, anyway, so we've had the clatter of boots, but before anything appears from that clatter of boots, we do get a black blade appear in the Murderer's hand. Turns towards Rand, raises the sword. Rand just like, shit, I'm going to die. Down comes the blade. It stops short. The Fade tells him that he belongs to the Dark One and rushes off, blending into shadow. As the boots appear in the form of Lan, leaping down the stairs, sword in hand. So, you had some thoughts here about that little interaction, didn't you?
Yeah, I was sort of trying to work out whether the Mithril stopped because Lan was coming or because it wants the three boys alive and saw better than being enclosed in the inn and having to fight to try and take them. Because I would assume that I also added the bit did it stop from putting the blade through Rand because of the Dark One's slow invasion into Rand's mind?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, I would assume the Dark One wants whichever one of them it is for itself, himself, hisself.
Either works.
And so killing them off is the last straw. Much the way Moraine has said, you know, I will kill you to stop them from getting you. It will only kill them if they completely refuse to bow.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess the logical thought process would be that it did not want the confrontation when it was alone.
Right.
And so escaped.
Okay, so almost like it was spying or something instead as opposed to actually coming to take the boys there and then type situation, unless it had the opportunity, I suppose.
Yeah, it potentially saw the opportunity with Rand alone and took it in attempt to maybe take him.
Okay.
But then, because of Lan's awakening or rousing, decided that it better make off.
Fair. Okay. Well, at this stage, Rand remembers that he has a sword. And he decides, well, I best get that out now that the dark creature has disappeared. Lan stops. He's like, it's gone. I love your description. So he can sense them, but he can't tell it's them. Just that danger is around. Seems like a half-assed warning light.
It's just because he's like, oh, you know, he's really uncomfortable. And he something's going on. He knows something's going on, but isn't like, oh, yeah, they're coming. It just felt a bit like, oh, well, you know, I know there's potential danger all around me all the time. It's not much good of a warning if I then stick my hand in the fire and go, oh, yeah, I knew that there was potential danger all around me.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll give you that one. We get more boots. Sorry, go for it.
I was just going to say I have the amazing ability of hindsight.
No, it's a wonderful ability. Don't deny it. So we get more boots, more people arriving. Matt, Perrin, Tom wrapped up in his blankets, and it's like, you know, they're surprised at what we're leaving now, and it's like, well, the Halfman's going to come back. So, you know, Moraine appears, Master Thitch appears. Tom says obviously he's going to go with them. Moraine's trying to convince the innkeeper to take this seriously, more about dark friends, and he's just like, that it's fine, don't worry. You know, if anything comes, is, you know, my guys will keep him out. You know, they're not going to get any information. And he's like, come on, look, I need to sort shit out before you go. So off you go type thing. And I like this guy. You like this guy. This is he's a fun character, isn't he?
Yeah, and I liked his attitude, which was like, yeah, don't worry, we'll sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
Hard as nails.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So, Moraine protests about his stubbornness, worries that things may come here looking for information. And you're curious here about whether this might be Thane's doing.
Yeah, it's still running through my head that, you know, did he pass on their whereabouts? He was so interested in, oh, how long are you staying there? You know, he seemed very interested in those snippets of information.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's convenient, isn't it, that on their final night, this happens.
Yep, they did just catch Thane at lunchtime, and then suddenly here we are late at night. We've got a Murdral invading the inn, and, you know, sort of midnight departure from it and such. So, yeah, it does kind of all fit together, doesn't it? So, it is a bit convenient. But, yeah, we've got Rand and Nynaeve chatting as she's, you know, as they're trying to get out. Clearly disturbed that the Fade was right there. But she's coming along because she's promised to see them safely back to Emmons Field, planning to keep that promise, and doesn't want to leave them alone. You've got curious a question here about whether they're warm to each other.
I can see that there's a potential for kindling of friendship here.
Okay.
You know, they are not alike, but are alike. There's similarities in you know, there's strength to them,
mm-hmm.
which I think potentially once they work past the I'm right sort of attitude, maybe they can see that both has something positive to share.
Yeah. Cool. So we've got a possible friendship, allies sort of situation will go here. Nice.
Yeah.
We got Rand being a little bit of a dick again. Taking pleasure from the fact that Egwene has a bit of fear in her eyes and no longer thinks this is an adventure. A bit mean of Rand.
Yeah. So, but we'll let it slide.
We'll let it slide on this one moment, apparently. So, all right. Anyway, he regrets the thought and apologizes for not thinking clearly. She leans down and grips his hands, and he notices that she no longer looks quite so afraid. So it was a momentary thing. But they're off to the gate. Master Fitch has seen them off. And you're curious what Fitch knows, to be honest, at this stage. So, you're like, after the knight's evil visit, what does he know?
Yeah.
Surely at
this point. He's very friendly with them and very calm throughout, isn't he? And I think if he didn't know anything of them except for this story that she's, you know, some well-off person who travels a lot, I think maybe his reaction would be different, or I would have thought it would be.
Yeah, so maybe he's maybe she regularly goes via Bailons and stuff and their buddies, who knows.
Yeah, but even if you traveled through somewhere and knew that, you know, the innkeeper very well, if one day the police will raid you or robbers will break in and try and snatch you or do something.
Yeah, you might think twice about those people, wouldn't you? So
yeah, the reaction to them afterwards might be slightly different.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. So, well, Rand doesn't think that, you know, secrets would be kept by much. But, you know, hey-ho, it's, you know, it is what it is. Fitch has promised them that everything's going to be all right, and you know, not like you do about it, I suppose. But he does look back as they're leaving. He sees a solitary lamplight and knows that it's much watching them. So you think maybe it wasn't Thane that caused issues there, potentially?
Yeah, the way it plays out made it sound like... I think I've written this a bit later on, but it's probably worth mentioning now. I didn't get much from the first interactions with much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't get an incredibly dodgy vibe. I just, you know, there was a bit of a look, I think, but it wasn't much.
Okay.
And I didn't read too much into that. But clearly I missed something because it comes back and, you know, there's obviously enough of a negative impression to make Rand notice.
Yes.
I clearly missed part of the chapter.
Well, maybe no. You were focused on some of the other craziness that was on the go. So, you know, there's yeah. many things you pick up on multiple rereads. So have no fear. I'm going to speed through this bit so we can talk about the fun stuff on it. So we get to the gates and, you know, we're waking people up and, you know, time to leave. You can't leave. White cloaks turn up. Who you going? Gates got to be kept shut. All this fucking chaos on the go here type thing. Obviously, we get the whole white cloak, you know, people, we hold sway over people walking the light and all that sort of shit. Lan does not look fazed by any of this interaction.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to really be bothered at all, does he? He's very calm, sat on his horse.
He's just there like, this is all chill, mate. It's fine. Don't worry. You know, we realize it's the same people from earlier because Rand is recognizing them. So, smugly, they're telling the Watchmen, oh, we've saved you some trouble, as the group are dark friends. And he should report the Watchmen to the Governor or to the Questioners. Which you've then questioned, are they torturers?
yeah, just because it's used that phrase, and I thought, well,
yeah.
Okay, Questioners. Are they like, are they essentially torturers or, you know?
There's an implication in the sentence, isn't there, that there's, you know,
yeah.
something dodgy. And then Moraine speaks up. You will take me to your camp, White Cloak. Voice coming from every direction. She'd moved into shadows of their appearance, but at this point she's stepping forward. And, you know, obviously Bornhouse shouts, Aes Sedai, all the five White Cloaks draw their swords. He shouts, Die, and the other four hesitates, but he slashes. And we get, you know, a bit of parry and thrusting and stuff here because, like, you know, he whips out the sword and up comes the staff. We get sparks flying out and Bornhold is launched back into his companions, falling into a heap. That's pretty sick, isn't it, as you've put it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it was mostly the imagery of, you know, what I assume is a wooden staff,
mm-hmm.
albeit magical. And he's swinging his sword, trying to chop her down. And she's just parrying it with this wooden staff that's sending sparks out. Like, it's actually rejecting the blade.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite a nice image.
Indeed. Very, very cool moment. You know, why has she got Lan when she can do this? that was my first thought was, damn, she's more of a badass than Lan is. So when I first read this,
he's still on the horse looking nonplussed, like, yeah,
I mean, maybe this is why he was just so cool and calm. I was like, ah, you know, he can swing a sword, she, you know, he ain't got shit, she's fine. So he's there, I'm here for the big stuff, White Cloaks, you know, they're like, you know, oh, there's a fly, she'll deal with that. So, you know, but she's pissed off, you know. She's looming down at them, she's growing in size. You know, it's like, what the f-? He's just getting massive. And at this stage, Lan's like, come on, grabs the horses, and let's just squeeze out through the gate. They get about 50 paces out, and they stop and wait. And at this point, we see Moraine stepping over the wall after she has,
yeah.
you know, cowered the White Cloaks and scared them off, so to speak. So, yeah, I love it. I love your comments.
Just read my notes.
Yeah. This woman is amazing. Screw being scared, Rand. He should be clapping. A better show than Tom's.
Yes, brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. So, I mean, as you've put in these notes here, when her feet touch the ground on the other side, she's normal size again. Now, this is a big debate. People have debated this fandom. Did she actually grow in size and physically step over the wall? Or was that some kind of imagery she put up? And as she stepped over the wall, that was her going through the gate and then, like, the image meeting up with her physical self and disappearing. Like, how did you...
Oh.
Was this some sort of fake... I don't know. Was it, like, some kind of Wheel of Time hologram? Or did she actually, you know, Alice in Wonderland herself and make herself giant?
Yeah, so I, when I was reading it, had... pictured her making herself grow in size.
Okay.
being slightly sidetracky and geeky. So I play a little bit of Dungeons and Dragons, mm-hmm. as I think we mentioned a while ago.
Yes.
And there is a couple of spells that essentially do what? Either make you very big, and then there's another spell that's either minor image or greater image, which creates a image of something that you can control. It's a lot easier to create an image. So, thinking about it, it'd probably be a lot less effort for her to create an image of something that scares the hell out of people than it would be to transform yourself. So while I initially thought, yeah, she's just turned into a giant meringue, I think it's probably an image.
Okay, cool.
An illusion.
Nice. I think the fandom is probably always going to be split on this. I'm on the image side of it. I don't think she increased her size. I don't think even then, when I first read the books and hadn't read the rest of the story, I even thought then that she had increased her size. I thought it was some kind of, you know, image that she created of herself. The reason people ask it is, why did the image have to step over the wall and then disappear? If it's just an image, why would it walk through the wall or something? I think things like that become their sticking point on it. So,
well, if you're trying to intimidate and scare people and stop them from taking aggressive action against you, and you have created this image of yourself suddenly doubling in size, so you loom above them and put the, you know, the fear of God into them as such, it would destroy that fear if they see it falter or just pass through something, because immediately you'd be like, well, that doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So by making it step over and then sort of disappear out of view, as it turns back into normal size moraine, or, you know, she's walked through, it stepped over and just sort of dropped into her,
mm-hmm.
continues that belief that it was real.
Cool. I like that logic. I mean, that was kind of my logic too. I was just curious how you viewed it. So,
yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, we've had the better than Tom performance. You know, someone says hold the gate, but it shuts anyway. You know, because as you say, Rand thinks maybe some of the White Cloaks aren't as eager to chase the Aes Sedai now. Moraine hops back on the horse, and you know, we get the questioning about it. You were taller than a giant. And Moraine brushes this off as a trick on the knight. I think after the conversation you and I just had discussing it, I don't think either of us thought it was a trick of the knight. But you know, she's trying to play it off that way, so you know, the boys are like, oh, we'll edge our horses slightly further away. And we head on. So it's about an hour along the road. And Matt's looking back, and we see some fire, some flames lighting up the night in Baelon. And Moraine says it's the inn. So, you know, it's as she warned him. Lan says maybe the light shines them tonight, which causes a shocked reaction. But he points out if they went to the inn, it's possible they do not know of their exit from Baelon tonight. So, you know, it's possible they've got a little bit of a head start. And Nynaeve is obviously pissed off and wants to go back and help, blaming Moraine. And, you know, she's like, well, it's just going to put all the boys in more peril. And I'll send some golden ship for repairs and anyone injured. And then, you know, off they head again. So who do you think's right here? Or who do you think is when you've got two shitty choices, the better of two evils? No.
Yeah.
Is that the right
thing? The lesser,
the lesser of two evils. Which is the better option of these two, you know? Which would
I think Moraine's.
Yeah.
I think emotional reaction is what Nynaeve's doing. Nynaeve is taking the emotional immediate reaction of, oh my god, people are getting hurt. We need to help them, which is a valid and just sort of reaction to have.
Mm-hmm.
But Moraine is thinking through these almost like chess pieces, I guess. She's thinking steps ahead.
Yeah, that's fair. I fall on that. I don't think anyone else I've ever spoke to would would be like, no, you had to go back. But I can certainly understand and empathize why Nynaeve wanted to. So, but yeah, cool. Well, we get a cold camp near dawn. You get an hour to kip. That's it. And despite the fact they've not slept this night so far, really, because they were up dancing all night. And while they rest, Matt whispers to Rand he thought they were safe within the walls of Baelon until the dream and then the fade. And he wonders if they will ever be safe. Rand says not until they reach Tarvalon. And Perrin says, will they be safe then? So what do you think about that little exchange between the boys? Words are up, words.
Well, as I put, my thoughts were that it was quite interesting that it appears like as a group, the three boys mm-hmm. are starting to sort of get the real danger that they're in. You know, as I've said, it's the first time they haven't bemoaned the situation specifically, as if they have a choice of what they're doing. Before, they've always complained and said, oh, you know, we should go back, or we should go here, or why do we have to travel, and blah, blah, blah. This is the first time the immediate reaction isn't that, and is instead, oh, God, I didn't realise how bad it was.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it is kind of the first time they're, you know, they've got a collective understanding that they're in the shit, they don't have a choice, and that's kind of just the thought process, and where we'll ever be safe as opposed to when this is done, you know. So yeah, it's a different dynamic at the end of this, isn't it? So
it feels like things are turning. The general attitude I mentioned about Rand seeming to be a little bit more mature,
mm-hmm.
but as a group it seems to be the dynamic is changing.
Yeah I think the realization is setting in a bit here, and this demonstrates it quite well, that they're actually getting that, as opposed to, you know, it's an adventure with a small small danger aspect, which I have to say is ironic considering Rand's comments on how, oh, finally Egwene doesn't see it like just an adventure, you know.
Yeah,
when that's kind of how they've been treating it themselves.
Yeah, I completely missed that, and that is
literally really because ironic, of that moment it? Before where we commented on, you know, seeing that's a bit of a dick move, saying, ah, you're not saying, now you don't think it's an adventure, do you, Egwene? Like, just because we spoke about that, like, a few minutes ago, it made me think about this moment. So, yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes, because that's basically the end of the chapter. We, you know, basically they get a bit of sleep, Lan wakes them up, and everyone looks like they've had a fucking hard day working in the kitchen with very little sleep and come back into the open the next morning. So just to use real world analogy that Null and I do. I'm sure they looked just as well as I looked yesterday morning when I was in at 7. You know, oh God, I had a horrible, I'll tell you about that afterwards, but oh God, did I have a fun day. I couldn't remember shit to save my life yesterday, and it just started from the moment I got up. But anyway, that's a different story. Yeah. That's it. Everyone looks tired and worn out, bleary-eyed, except for Lan, who is not bleary-eyed or huddled in his cloak. So what does that say? Do you think that says anything special about Lan, or is he just tough as nails?
Well, I don't know particularly, but I would suspect that he is obviously... he is used to this kind of... Well, maybe not used to, but he's you know, he's done this sort of thing before. He's kept watch for long hours. He's had to travel long distances. He's no stranger to danger.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I was makes me think about I was watching, you know, as one is to do, just watching random toots on social media, and there was a discussion. It was like a would you rather game between a doctor and a nurse. And it was silly things like, you know, would you rather take blood or put in a catheter, would you rather never be able to change your scrubs again or never be able to change your underwear again, type thing. And it was just like general conversations, and one of them was, would you rather oversleep for your shift and be late to work, or work 24-hour shift? And they were both like, work 24-hour shift. I've done so many that it doesn't even, but you know, it doesn't matter. You know, and doctors and firefighters and people of that nature quite often work, you know, shifts like that, which is crazy, by the way, just as a slight tangent. But it makes me think, like, Lan is clearly used to just being up all night and getting on with the rest of the day and it not bothering at all. So I liked that that was mentioned and made a note of here, just personally.
I mean, on the note of 24-hour shifts, there has been time where we have done 17-plus-hour shifts.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that far off, no. Right? 5 hours. That's enough time for us to drop onto a grill. But, you know, it's not that far off. I mean, personally, I agree with your statement that that's crazy. I don't know how a person with that much responsibility is able to keep doing their job for that length of time, particularly someone that is literally got people's lives in their hands.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a crazy thing. So, I mean, but
much respect to those who do.
Yeah. I mean, that is why they're heroes. Or they're all warders very secretly. Because you know, maybe it's a water power. I don't know. But yeah, anyway, Lan gets up. I like the appreciation that everyone else has had a bit of kip. Maybe it's because they've had an hour's kip. I mean, have you ever done that? Taken a nap and woken up feeling worse than when you went to sleep? I've done that.
No, I couldn't do it. If I won't go to sleep for an hour, I'm asleep for about 8. That's it.
Oh, okay. Null can't nap. Fair enough.
There is no such thing as a nap.
This is a thing. This does happen. So, yeah. But yeah, that is the end of the chapter. So aside from learning that Null can't nap, what did you think of this chapter compared to the previous chapter? We got like exposition and, well, a little bit of exposition and story stuff and dialogue, and then we got Murdral and you know, white cloaks and magic giants and shit like that. Like, two very different styles of chapters.
Yeah, I mean, I quite enjoyed this chapter. Purely, I think I really enjoyed the white cloak part. I liked Bornhold. As a passing character in this, mostly because I like the idea that he's sort of fuming that they got away afterwards, sort of raised his fist like, "Where are you off?" You know, potentially he could pop up in the future as being this annoyed guy that's still after them.
But, okay. That sounded like a potential prediction? I haven't pushed you for any predictions in the last couple of recordings, so...
I don't know whether it's a...
More of a casual, like, I think this guy might reappear type statement, then perhaps is how that
goes. I think it would be an amusing storyline if this guy just keeps appearing and can't actually get them.
Okay, so, ladies and gents, Bornhold is now a Wheel of Time sort of comic bit in the story. That just sort of, he's like the guy at the end of Scooby-Doo, like, "Those pesky kids, if only I could have stopped," you know. Like, Bornhold's just going to turn like, "I keep wanting to capture you, but I can't." And yeah, I like that. That's fun, you know. Sorry, I like to sometimes you say things. I'm like, oh, I just want, let's just put that down somewhere. In fact, I'm going to put that in the notes. Can I edit these? Yes, there we go. Edit the notes. Oh, it's taking me all the way back to chapter 3. I'll do that afterwards. But yeah, fun. Anything else apart from Bornhold that you picked up that you really liked or wanted to delve into a little bit more?
No, I mean, we've talked about Moraine getting big and the ideas behind that and sort of solidified my thoughts on that.
Cool.
What else has happened that possibly...
The Murdral.
I think we've spoken about most of it. I think with the Murdral, I think it will be interesting to see how it is presented in the show. Because okay. I think we spoke about this in person a while ago about how people create an image of a character in their head and then are disappointed when it doesn't fit. And there's been a lot of grumbling from some people with the casting of certain characters in The Wheel of Time.
You are so diplomatic with the way you worded that, but yes, you are correct.
Oh. And how, you know, you are never going to get somebody else casting somebody into a position that's going to perfectly mirror what's in your head, because those people aren't real.
Very true. And there's so many people to have read the story that will be envisioning something slightly
completely different things, yeah.
So even if you have very similar outlooks on life, very similar experiences, you're still going to envision, you know, different characters in your head. So yeah, it's an impossible task.
Yeah. So with the myth and drawl, I have that sort of dementor image, essentially just a large black cloak with, you know, very hooded, and maybe slightly tattered bottom, but. You know, I've only encountered them a couple of times, a handful of times so far.
Yes.
It'd be interesting to see what they look like in the story, because I think it would solidify my... In this case, I think it would solidify how I view them rather than have a contrast.
Cool. Well, if we get a Murdral reveal pre-show, I will very happily share it with you. So that you can see, as long as it doesn't contain spoilers for anything you haven't read yet, in which case I would just cut out that piece and show you that piece. But yeah, if we get a merge or reveal, I will happily share it with you, and we can discuss on whether we think they got it right, nailed the essence of the creature, or missed a trick, or did more than we expected, so to speak. So, sweet. Well, we're a few minutes over, but we managed to pretty much do that in about 40-45 minutes, so nicely done. Of course, it might be less when I edit it out, if I edit out my words of rambling where I go, well, what's the word? Words. But we've done two chapters today now. I'm impressed. We've managed two chapters again, so.
It is probably a good thing that we have saved 18 for a separate recording, because I think we are going to have quite a bit to talk about.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. So, yeah, Chapter 18 is up next, folks, and that will be probably a chapter, will be one episode by itself. We'll record that at some point, potentially, God, I'm trying to think, time off. Potentially, well, I'm off next, so Lynn and I have like a day together back at work, and then I'm off for a couple of weeks. So we might do something there if it fits, and if Noel feels up to it on his days off. It might wait a couple of weeks afterwards and we fit something in. Who knows? But Chapter 18 is coming, so do not worry. And Noel is only a few chapters away from listening to the, canonically speaking, first narration that I've done with a musician, or just in general, because I had music to all of them. So that'll be exciting for him to hear that at some point too. But yeah, thank you, Noel. It's been fun. If you want to track Noel down, folks, you can find him on Twitter, link in the description, or you can join my Discord server. And there's a whole little section for Noel where we sit and record these. You know, this is it's pretty much the only podcast, aside from once a month, sort of like big ones, Noel and I just record in the server itself, just on a casual basis. So if you want to potentially catch that and listen as we ramble shit, you need to join the Discord server. So it's good fun. There's lots of fun things in it, especially if you're a nerd. We've got Star Trek shit and all sorts. It's good fun. So can you see the Star Trek channel? Is that one open to you?
I don't think I can.
Oh, I'll have to open the Star Trek channel to you. You're a Trekkie, aren't you?
A little bit.
Enough to enjoy a chat about it. I've got food channels as well. Why are you not on the food channel? I'll open those ones, because those are, you know, I'll make those three.
The food channel is there, I think. Okay. I wouldn't ever put anything in it, because I've eaten the food before I have a chance to take a picture.
All right, so, well, I'll go through the others, because there's like I added the Star Trek channel. There's like green things. I'll hide the Tap Tricks one for you, because that was spoil stuff. But the ones that don't have spoilers in it. Wheel of Trek, yeah.
Yes, it's there. I can see it. Cool.
Yeah, there we go. So we've got Trekkie things. We've got like a birthday channel. There's the joke channel. Also, we've got some fun channels in this. I've set up some fun things in my server. So yeah, if you want to find Null, you got to join the Discord, because that's the fun place to do it. Alternatively, say you can find him on Twitter, which is at @null_void and NUL_VOID. You can find me and my Wheel of Time based dad jokes, Tam jokes, at Malkiri R. You can email me, malkiatalks@gmail.com, if you don't want to use any of those formats and be like, hey Rob, how's it going? I think this was great about Null, or, you know, I listened to your episode about, I don't know, Tam being evil or something, and, you know, it was a load of shit, or I thought it was hilarious, or whatever. You know, all sorts of, I've done all sorts of episodes, so you can use the email if you don't want to message me anywhere else. If you like cooking or narrations, because I do try and take pictures of the food I make before I eat it, that's Wheel of Time based, you can find me on YouTube, Malky Talks. You can come have some fun ones there. I upset people recently when I suggested a character could be cut, but that's only because we haven't had her cast yet, and I talked about implications for the series, but people got upset over the title, so won't reveal that because it's a spoiler. But yeah, I'll be doing food again soon, so you can check that out. Alternatively, just, you know, listen to the podcast, love it, subscribe, like, comment, tweet, all those bits and pieces in general. And if you want to support the channel and help me grow and, you know, do more things and have more things that, you know, means I can do better things, then you can, you know, support me on Patreon. It's the best way to do it. So it's patreon.com/MalkierTalks, and there's benefits up for grabs there, and lots of love from me, special sections in Discord, and, you know, merch and content early, and, you know, all sorts of bits and pieces like that. So go have a look and, you know, support me if you feel so inclined, and I will love you forever. A little bit more than I love that. No, I'm joking. No, just as much as I love everybody. So, yeah. No, thank you again. I'll let you enjoy the rest of your day killing weeds or whatever it is now. Or are you on to the fencing?
Oh, God. No, fencing starts tomorrow. I've got a small patch of weeds to finish burning.
All right.
And then hopefully a barbecue.
Nice. Nice barbecue. I'm going to just have something, whatever I end up throwing in the oven for dinner, probably just do some sort of roast because it's a Sunday and I've got roast veggies in the freezer. So fun. Oh. Until next time, everybody. Yep. Thank you for joining
Null and I.
Sorry?
I said thank you and take care. And stay safe.
Oh, yes. There we go. Null, you can do the sign off. What do I say at the end?
Words.
Until next time, everybody. Words. I love that.